Chapter 30 Carnival of Souls. At 4 o'clock, Yamazaki descended the rungs he'd climbed with Lovelace, in the dark the night before. Fontaine had gone 20 minutes before the power returned, taking with him, against Skinner's protests, an enormous bundle of washing. Skinner had spent the day sorting and resorting the contents of the green toolkit, the one he'd overturned in his bid for the bolt cutters. Yamazaki had watched the old man's hands as they touched each tool in turn, imagining he saw some momentary strength or purpose flow into them there, or perhaps only memories of tasks undertaken, abandoned, completed.
"You can always sell tools," Skinner had mused, perhaps to Yamazaki, perhaps to himself. "Somebody'll always buy 'em. But then you always need 'em again, exactly the one you sold."
Yamazaki didn't know the English words for most of the tools there, and many were completely unfamiliar.
"T-reamer,"
Skinner said, holding up his fist, a rust-brown, machined spike of steel protruding menacingly between his second and third fingers.
"Now, that's about as handy a thing as you can have, Scooter, but most people never seen one."
"Its purpose, Skinner-san?"
"Makes a round hole bigger. Keeps it round, too, you use it right. Sheet metal, mostly, but it'll do plastics, synthetics, anything thin, fairly rigid, short of glass."
"You have many tools, Skinner-san."
"Never learned how to really use them, though."
"But you built this room."
"You ever watch a real carpenter work, Scooter?"
"Once, yes,"
Yamazaki said, remembering a demonstration at a festival, the black blades flying, the smell of cut cedar. He remembered the look of the lumber, creamy and flawless. A tea-house was being erected to stand for the duration of the festival.
"Wood is very scarce in Tokyo, Skinner-san. You would not see it thrown away, not even small scraps."
"Not that easy to come by here,"
Skinner said, rubbing the ball of his thumb with the edge of a chisel. Did he mean in America? San Francisco? On the bridge?
"We used to burn our scrap before we got the power in. Said he didn't like that at all. Bad for the air, Scooter. Don't do that as much now."
"This is by consensus?"
"Just common sense."
Skinner put the chisel into a greasy canvas case and tucked it carefully away in the green box. A procession was making its way toward San Francisco along the upper deck, and Yamazaki instantly regretted having left his notebook in Skinner's room. This was the first evidence he had seen here of public ritual. In the narrow, enclosed space, it was impossible to view the procession as anything other than a succession of participants, in their ones and twos. But it was a procession, nonetheless, and clearly funereal, perhaps memorial in its purpose. First came children, 7 by his hasty count, one behind the other, in ragged, ash-dusted clothing. Each child wore a mask of painted plaster, clearly intended to represent Shapely. But there was nothing funereal in their progress. Several were skipping, delighted with the attention they were receiving. Yamazaki, on his way to purchase hot soup, had halted between a bookseller's wagon and a stall hung with caged birds. He felt awkward there, very much out of place with the unaccustomed shape of the insulated canister under his arm. If this was a funeral, perhaps there was some required gesture, some attitude he might be expected to assume. He glanced at the bookseller, a tall woman in a greasy sheepskin vest, her gray hair bound back into a knot transfixed by 2 pink plastic chopsticks. Her stock, which consisted primarily of yellowing paperbacks in various stages of disintegration, each in a clear plastic bag, was stacked before her on her wagon. She had been crying her wares when she saw the children, masked as Shapely. She had been calling out strange phrases that he supposed were titles— Valley of the Dolls, Blood Meridian, Chainsaw Savvy. Yamazaki, struck by the queer American poetry, had been on the verge of asking after Chainsaw Savvy. Then she'd fallen silent, and he too had seen the children. But there was nothing in her manner now that indicated the procession required anything more of her than whatever degree of her attention she might choose to afford it. She was automatically counting her stock, he saw, as she watched the children pass, her hands moving over the bagged books. The keeper of the bird stall, a pale man with a carefully groomed black mustache, was scratching his stomach, his expression mild and blank. After the children came five dancers in the skeleton suits of La Noche de Muerte, though Yamazaki saw that several of the masks were only half-masks, micropore respirators molded to resemble the grinning jaws of skulls. These were teenagers, evidently, and shaking to some inner music of plague and chaos. There was a strong erotic undercurrent, a violence to the black, bone-painted thighs, the white cartoon pelvises dabbed on narrow, denimed buttocks. As the bone dancers passed, one fixed Yamazaki with a sharp stare, blue adolescent eyes above the black, molded nostrils of the white respirator. Then two tall figures, black men in an ugly beige face paint, costumed as surgeons in pale green gowns and long gloves of scarlet latex. Were they the doctors, predominantly white, who had failed to rescue so many prior to Shapley's advent, or did they somehow represent the Brazilian biomedical firms who had so successfully and lucratively overseen Shapley's transformation, the illiterate prostitute become the splendid source? And after them, the first of the bodies, wrapped and bound in layers of milky plastic, each one riding a two-wheeled cart of the kind manufactured here to transport baggage or bulk foodstuffs. The carts, temporarily equipped with narrow pallets of plywood, were steered along, front and back, by men and women of no special costume or demeanor, though Yamazaki noted that they looked neither to the right nor left and seemed to make no eye contact with the onlookers.
"There's Nigel," the bookseller said, "and probably built the cart they're taking him off on."
"These are the victims of the storm?" Yamazaki ventured.
"Not Nigel," the woman said, narrowing her eyes as she saw that he was a stranger. "Not with those holes in him."
Seven in all, each to its cart, and then a man and a woman in identical paper coveralls, carrying between them a laminated lithograph of Shapley, one of those saccharine portraits, large of eye and hollow of cheek, that invariably left Yamazaki feeling slightly queasy. But then a small, red, capering figure, a tailless, hornless devil, perhaps, dancing with an enormous gun, an ancient AK-47, its bolt long gone, the curved magazine carved from wood, and all of it dipped once into red enamel, worn now by hands, by processions. And Yamazaki knew, without asking, that the red dancer represented the way of Shapley's going, like some terrible base stupidity waiting at the core of things.
"Skinner-san," the notebook ready, "I saw a procession today, bodies being taken from the bridge, the dead from the storm."
"Can't keep them out here. Can't throw them in the water. City sticks on that. We pass them over for cremation. Some people they don't hold with fire, they bury them over on treasure. Kind of people live out on treasure, you kind of wonder if that makes much sense."
"In the procession, there were many references to Shapley, to his story."
Skinner nodded over his little television.
"Children masked as J.D. Shapley, two black men painted as white doctors, Shapley's portrait."
Skinner grunted. Then, distantly,
"While since I saw one of those."
"And at the end, a small figure, red, dancing, with an assault rifle."
"Uh-huh,"
Skinner nodded. Yamazaki activated the notebook's transcription function.
"Me, you know. I never even got it. Off him, I mean. That piece of him in everybody now. Couldn't see the point at my age, and anyway, I never held with medicine. Happened I never got the other kind either, not that I didn't have plenty of chances. You're too young to remember how it felt, though. Oh, I know, you all think you live in all the times at once, everything recorded for you. It's all there to play back, digital. That's all that is, though, playback. You still don't remember what it felt like, watching them pile up like that. Not here so much, bad as it was, but Thailand, Africa, Brazil. Jesus, Scooter. That thing was just romping on us. But slow, slow, slow motion thing. Those retroviruses are. One man told me once, and he had the old kind and died of it, how we lived in this funny little pocket of time when A lot of people got to feel like a piece of ass wasn't going to kill anybody, not even a woman. See, they always had to worry anyway. Every time, it's a chance. Get knocked up and maybe die in childbirth. Die getting rid of it, or... anyway, your life's not going to be the same. But in that pocket there, there were pills for that. What not? Shots for the other things. Even the ones that killed people all over hell before. That was a time, Scooter. So, here this thing comes along, changes it back. And we're sliding up on 2000, shit's changing all over. Got civil wars in Europe already, and this AIDS thing just kicking along. You know, they tried to say it was the gays. Said it was the CIA, said it was the U.S. Army in some fort in Maryland. Said it was people cornholing green monkeys, I swear to God. You know what it was? People. Just too goddamn many of them, Scooter. Flying all the fuck over everywhere and walking around back in there. Bet your ass somebody's gonna pick up a bug or two. Every place on the damn planet, just a couple hours from any other place. So here's poor fucking Shapley comes along. He's got this mutant strain, won't kill you. Won't do shit to you at all, except it eats the old kind for breakfast. And I don't buy any of that bullshit. He was Jesus, Scooter. Didn't think Jesus was either. Any coffee left?
I will pump stove.
Put a little drop of 3-in-1 in that hole by the piston arm, Scooter. Leather gasket in there. Keeps it soft.